Hi, everyone. I'm Tony Toretsky.
And I'm Peg Tuttle. Welcome to The Incredible Eye Show.
Today on The Incredible Eye Show, we have the man that wrote the book. Scratch that. He wrote four books on the IBM Eye, Control Language, Programming an ILE RPG, and Programming an RPG 4.
Everybody around our IBM Eye community knows Jim Buck. He is a speaker, an IBM Eye champion, 5 years, by the way. He's from Kenosha, Wisconsin. He's a sailor. He's the past president of the WMCPA user group. And now he is the CEO, co-founder of Empower Technologies. Welcome to the show, Jim. All right, everybody, welcome to the Incredible Eye Show. We are so excited to have our friend Jim Buck from Kenosha, Wisconsin on the call with us today. Welcome, Jim Buck, to the call.
Woo. Hey, Jim.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on the Eye Show.
Yeah, we are too.
We're excited to have you.
Yeah. So, Jim, let's go ahead and have you start off just talking a little bit about yourself, a little bit of your history, share with everybody that's listening in today.
Well, I've worked on the platform pretty much my whole career. I was at Maytag when I started working on them in 1989. And pretty much that's all I've done. And, in 2002, I had an opportunity to start teaching at a college. And I told my wife, I said, you know, kind of how it happened is the hospital I was working at moved to a different platform. And I decided I wanted to stay with the IBM platform. So I was looking at Monster for a job, and a job teaching in some place called Kenosha, Wisconsin showed up in Monster. And I said, well, where's Kenosha, Wisconsin? And I looked at it on the map, and there's this big lake there called Lake Michigan. So I thought, wow, I've never taught full time, but I should go check it out. So I went to the job interview, and I was there about halfway through the job interview when I realized that they only wanted me to work 8 months out of the year. And 3 months I'd had off would be in the summertime. So I said, well, I got to do that. So I got the job, and then I got involved with the IBM Academic Initiative and started writing some books with Brian Myers. And I guess the rest is history.
I love that. Okay, so a part of your story is that you are, and we'll dive into more about the IBM Eye and stuff like that, but you saw this big lake, and I know you're a huge sailor. So did you know how to sail before you got to Kenosha, or was that something that you kind of acquired on the way?
No, actually, I started sailing in college, and I lived by the Mississippi, and everybody was going to the river on the weekends, and I was putting myself through school, so I didn't have any money. And a buddy of mine and I went in on this old beat up Hobie Cat, and that's kind of how I got introduced into sailing. I wasn't 21 yet, so I've been sailing all my life.
And that's pretty cool. So of course you were looking for a house on the water.
Yeah.
So I want to ask about Maytag. So you started in 1989. I guess it would have been the AS400 at the time. And were you a programmer?
Well, I actually started working on, you know, programming in 1980. And my first job was shoveling computer cards into a card reader on third shift. And they were going from a card-based system to the first MRP system that Magic Chef, which was Admiral was a division of, the first MRP system the corporation had have, and that was running on Prime computers. So they, you know, I was a third shift operator, and they promoted me to programming, and I was the first college educated programmer at Admiral. Before that, you actually bid off of the production floor into a job programming. So, I mean, I started right at the beginning, and we ran these Prime computers till, I don't know, 88 maybe, and Maytag bought Magic Chef, and they were Big Blue, so they had a bunch of mainframes, and they put us in mainframe school, and I didn't like mainframes. But then they called us in the executive conference room one day and said, we're going to this new product called an AS400, which there'd been a lot of rumors about the Silver Lake project before then. And I remember sitting in the conference room with the hair in the back of my head crawling, thinking there is a Lord, because I'd worked on a 34s and 36s, and I was thinking a career in mainframes was going to kill me. So I was really happy.
That is so funny. I love it. I love it. And then Maytag actually ended up being a huge AS400 shop for a really, really long time.
Yep. Yeah. And they were in Newton, Iowa.
Yeah, Newton, Iowa. Yep.
And they still had a bunch of mainframes, and I tried to stay as far away from them as I could. Not that mainframes aren't cool. Maybe it was, we had a database administrator that made you fill out all this paperwork that you had to fill out, you know, like four forms to get a file made. And I thought, man, this is crazy, because the primes that we worked on were kind of like big PCs. They were mini computers back then. There was a lot of HPs and a lot of different mini computers. And the IBM I is really the only one that has a history, that's still around, that has a history that goes back that far. So when they announced the AS400, it was really cool. I mean, everybody was excited about it.
And that would have been your first taste at RPG also, when Maytag went to an AS400.
Well, actually, I had RPG on a Burroughs when I was in college. I think the editor we had, because IBM had that compiler on different systems back then, and the college had a Burroughs mainframe, I took a COBOL class, which was card based, and then we had an RPG class that was actually, you know, you keyed in on the terminal. So I immediately liked RPG better than COBOL, because I writing programs on cards was really bad. When I was teaching at the college, I used to always tell the kids I should make them write one program on cards before they could graduate. And that was met with quite a bit of resistance. They didn't like that idea at all.
You know, I keep hearing about this, the olden days of programming where you had to write on cards, and I honestly don't even know what it means. How do you write on an actual card? You got to punch something out?
Well, you had, there were Hollabirth cards, right? And they had columns, and that you would key in on a keyboard, and it would punch the program on these paper cards. So you had a deck of cards that was your actual program. So like when I was on third shift, you'd take the deck of cards, which was the program, you'd put that in the card reader, and then you'd fill trays and trays of computer cards, which was your data. And then the last card you put in was a end of job card. And then when it saw that, it would say, oh, okay, well, I've got my computer program, and then I have my data. So now I can process.
And I just Googled punch card programming for the first time. This looks like an old, like a Scantron that you would take in high school and middle school, but punched out. I don't know how to read this. I got to be honest. If I saw this, I don't think that I would continue in programming.
Well, I mean, it was exciting back then. I mean, it really was, you know. And things started progressing really, really fast. I spoke at LUG a few years ago, and they had a dinner, and there were a bunch of us guys that have been around for a while. We're talking about those days, and one of them said, yeah, we were like a bunch of cowboys back then. You know, you could do anything. The government wasn't involved. If you could figure out how to make it work, you were good. So it was interesting times.
So I want to hear how you went from punch card programming to writing the book, literally, on ILE RPG.
Well, I was, you know, I moved from, you know, working full time in industry, because I always was doing consulting and stuff when I was at the college. So I always kept my hand in what was going on with business. And I was president of the WMCPA, which is the Wisconsin user group. I was president of that for 13 years. That's an interesting story how that happened. But anyway, to your question, I was teaching at the college, and I had this RPG book is in the fifth edition. In fact, there's a rumor there might be a sixth edition in the works. But it goes back to the first edition. And anyway, I was using the third edition in the classroom, and it was so outdated that you couldn't hardly teach with it, right? And I was always calling the publisher and telling them, you know, you need to get on the stick here and update that book, because it's way behind the operating system. And one day the publisher called and they said, well, we're going to update that book. And I said, oh, great. When's it going to be done? And she goes, well, when you and Brian get it done, Brian Myers. And I didn't know Brian.
That's funny.
And I didn't know Brian. And that's what I told her. I said, well, I don't know Brian. And she says, well, that's fine. Here's his phone number. You two call. You call each other and figure out how to get it done. And that's kind of how I got into the book writing business. I did it to, so I had something in the classroom. I mean, you know, if I could get that RPG book, like, number one on the New York,
you know, best time sellers list.
Yeah, that I'd make some money on it, right? But you don't write those books to make any money. I'll never retire on those books, let me tell you. You know, it was good. It was fun to, you know, have new textbooks for the students. And of course, you know, the trouble with writing a textbook, if you're teaching students, they tell you anything that's wrong with the book. You know,
like if you have a spelling error or you're missing a period error. Or grammar, yeah. All of that stuff.
But you know, that's not right. Oh, okay. Because I had no idea what went into, you know, writing a book. You write it, you submit it to an editor, and then they work on it, and then they send it back to Brian. Brian works on it, and I work on it, and we send it back again, and you'd think by then there wouldn't be any problems, you know. But then, you know, you have some students say, well, you know, and on page 249 in chapter 12, that sentence doesn't make any sense. Then you go, and you go, oh, well, it doesn't, does it? But yeah, it was fun. And then I did that mastering book, and we did a CL book. So it's been a lot of fun, and I really enjoy working with young people. You know, I'm the president of the Sailing Center here in Kenosha, because kids are our future, right? And it's been fun all these years working with them.
I have questions about how you teach the IBMI and RPG to these students. What is your curriculum like? Because I want to tell you, when I started at this job, before I had no idea what the IBMI was, and when I accepted the job, they said, you know, you'll learn on the job, someone will teach you everything. They gave me like a 20-minute lesson on what the IBMI was about, and then they threw your book at me and they said, stare at this until it makes sense.
And you hated me, right?
No, I didn't hate you. I appreciated that there was something out there in a structured format to learn this. But it was a hard 6 months to figure out what this was all about. And your book helped me through that a lot. So I'm curious what your curriculum is like and how the students perceive it. Do they enjoy it? Because I imagine they're taking other CS classes as well that aren't necessarily anything like the IBMI and RPG. So what's the feedback and what's your...
I left the college 4.5 years ago when we started my own business teaching IBMI stuff.
Yeah, I'm Power Technologies. We're going to have you talk a little bit about that too. So,
I'm empowering you. That's the way it's pronounced. Michelle came up with that, my business partner.
I like that. Sorry, I messed that up. Sorry, Michelle.
No, so, you know, here's the problem with young kids have in the IBMI system. Okay. They don't, you know, you always hear, oh, young kids won't learn RPG. And that's a bunch of BS. Can I say that on?
I guess you can say whatever you want. Absolutely.
Yes, you can. We can put explicit.
Are you
going to
bleep it?
No, bleeping.
BS. I've never been bleeped online before. So anyway,
we don't have bleeping capabilities. We agree with you.
So here's the deal with young people and the IBMI system and RPG. And, you know, I can't tell you how many hundreds of kids I've introduced to the IBM system over the years, but they love the new RPG. They love the new tools, you know, the ACS and, you know, RDI and Liam's working on that VS based stuff. So, I mean, there's just all kinds of tools. And the language is like any other language to them. Okay, there's certain things they really, really like about it, and like being able to use the database without creating a connection and all the other BS you have to do when you're like programming with Java or PHP or something, because RPG is so tightly coupled with the database, right? So they really like that stuff. And you hear things like, well, it's kind of like Java. It looks like Java, right? That kind of stuff. What they don't like, and this is what I tell all companies, is, and actually, I had a young lady. This is when I was at the college. She knows who she is. She still works on the platform. Went to a job interview down in Chicago in some big company, multi-billion-dollar company. And they told her that to forget RDI, forget free format, that they were sticking with SEU and PDM and fixed format RPG. And she got up and left the interview. And she called me afterwards and she said, Jim, I don't want you mad at me, but I thought it would ruin my career. And I said, I can't argue with you. And she took a job paying like, I don't know, probably $4,000 or $5,000 less. And of course, she made it up, because this company let her do the new stuff. And I tell that story to a lot of these companies I talk to. The problem isn't with the new stuff. If you expect them to work on, old code, you know, I mean, there's a lot of System 38 code, System 36, RPG2. And if you expect them to work on that, they're not going to do it. And they don't have to. If you look at what's the requirements for IT people in the coming years on all platforms, all languages, you know, sometimes I think, well, we're never going to be able to meet that demand. So on the other hand, if you hire a young developer and you say, you know, I know I got this old stuff, but one of the things we're going to do is we're going to work on getting it, you know, upgraded, and we're going to do new things and stuff like that. They're all on board with that.
Yeah, that modernization effort.
Yeah, all that stuff. But if you expect them to go in there and You know,
so the only thing
they're missing, Peg, is the card deck.
Right. And if they need one, I'm sure they can come to you and get one.
You know,
I've been looking somewhere.
When I was at the college, I tried to get a card deck to show the students an actual program. And I think they're all gone. Somebody, I'm sure, has got one in a drawer somewhere. If you happen to see this and you want to send me a card deck, I'd appreciate it. And I'll show it to all my students in the future.
Yeah, we'll make sure that that your information is included in the show notes so people can reach out to you. But, you know, so let's talk a little bit about that, because, you know, Tony didn't come into PC Richard with an IBM background, even knowing RPG. So what about your clients today? What are they like? You know, you've got Empower and you are, you know, it's an education company. Training and what are the clients like now? Are they all of them? Are they coming to you to learn RPG, or are they coming to you to brush up on their old skills? I don't know. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, what I found when I was at the college is that I could send kids all over the U.S. Okay. I could send kids to Florida, to Texas, to California, but there's places they wouldn't go, right? Like you say, well, I got a job in Des Moines, Iowa, and don't anybody in Des Moines be mad at me. And these kids would say, well, I'm not going to Iowa, you know, and they wouldn't go to Alaska. So Michelle, my business partner, is actually a graduate of mine, and we figured that what we'd be doing is a company would hire somebody local, maybe, you know, out of a 2-year school or somebody with web skills. And then we would teach them remotely about the IBM I. So that was our original business plan. And it's kind of interesting because about 30% of our customers are developers that I like to use the term seasoned developers. That, you know, have woken up and said, you know, I got another 10 or 15 years and I need to update my skill set. So we really have those two type customers. We're seeing a lot of companies hiring young people, web developers, training them with IBM I. We also see a lot of companies taking people that have web skills and maybe .NET skills and cross-training them on the IBM I. And they don't, like I said, they don't have any problems with the new RPG. It's you know, if you tell them, well, it's kind of a little short side note here. I had a young man that, in fact, he still comes to the Wednesdays. We have a 3-hour open WebEx, and he still comes. He finished the course months ago. He was from a different platform, and I taught him all this new stuff. And then they called him in the back room and they said, we got this other stuff to work on. And it was a bunch of System 36 stuff. Well, he showed up at the next WebEx and he was really mad at me. Like I baited and switched him. Like I showed him all this new stuff. And then he said, they got this old stuff they want me to work on. So I was able to talk to him and convince him to convince his boss that rather than fix this stuff, why don't they just spend the extra time and upgrade it? And what it was a manufacturing company, and it was some production reports. And this stuff had been written in the 80s, right? And most of my career was in manufacturing. And a lot of these reports over the years, they get bad, you know, and they don't get fixed and stuff like that. So he ended up rewriting a lot of this stuff. And like the manufacturing people are real happy that they finally got their reports fixed after what, 15 years.
Mm-hmm. So that's maybe the biggest part of my day to day now is rewriting old reports to modern free format, modular, commented, neat, clean code.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, you can bear me out that some of them old reports are wrong. They've been wrong for years. and what the production people do is they just, well, you know, that column doesn't work anymore, and they scratch it out. You know, and you go and talk to them and they go, yeah, that's been wrong for years. And maybe it's something like a product type has changed and what the way it was developed and report. So yeah, there's a lot of that goes on.
So Jim, I just want to backtrack for a second here. You have a company that hires a new developer who's never heard of RPG. They send them to you. Are these one-on-one trainings, or do you wait until you have a group of students and do it that way?
Well, when we decided to go into business, okay, Michelle had her first degree was in web stuff, and she's really good with that. And she took the IBM stuff because another instructor told her, you know, if you know both these things, you'll be more valuable. So that's how she got involved with IBM I. So when I left college and decided to start our own business, we started talking to companies. And my first idea was to wait until I got like 5 students, right? And then start a traditional online class. And we got a lot of companies saying, no. What we want to do is we want to start when we want to start. We want to progress at our own pace and then be done at, you know, and like the RPG class, which is the main one, I would say, we have to shut it off at some time. So we shut it off at 10 weeks, but sometimes people get through it in 4 weeks. Like if, you know, if you get hired and the boss says, I don't want you to do anything but that class, you can do it in 4 weeks. What we usually suggest is that they work at your company, learning your business half the time, and the other half the time they work on the class. And it was funny. I was talking to a guy the other day and I said, he said, well, how's he going to learn my business? And I said, well, send him to accounting, send him to the shop floor, send him to shipping, send him to expediting. And the guy looked at me and he says, well, that's amazing. He will learn my business. Because when these old guys walk out, they're taking some RPG skills with them. But their big thing is they know your business. There's really no department in an organization that knows how the company runs as well as the IT, especially the programmers. I mean, some of these guys have been writing code on your system for 20 years. They know more about your system, your business than, you know, anybody, the expediters, the accountants.
Yeah, even some of the owners, you know, when you think about it. So it's really training on demand. So they're training on demand. They're actually getting their training in and talking to the business user about what they're doing and tying it all back together.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a combination of labs and you get quizzes, you get assignments, and I grade the assignments. So it's really unique. Because most professional training, you don't have responsibility. You know what I mean? You're not held accountable for your work. So I actually cover in 10 weeks that whole RPG book. And I take somebody that's never written an RPG program to someone that can write web services. So and I couldn't have done it if I didn't have 15 years and 4 textbooks. You know, because I have the databases, the programs, all that stuff.
Jim, I'm curious, are you also teaching IBM I system administration and navigation stuff, or are you just focusing on RPG?
No, we have a concepts class, and that's based on that mastering IBM I, that textbook. So like if you were coming from another platform and you didn't know anything about the IBM system, we'd have you take the concepts class first, which introduces you to the operating system, to the database, to the tools, and then you take the RPG class.
And that makes sense.
Because you gotta learn
the basic stuff first.
Yeah, because you know the operating system is different enough that somebody coming from another platform, you know, like they compile their program. Okay, I compiled it. Where did it go? How do I run it? How come I can compile it in one place and not in another? You know, and what's these weird errors I get? So what we try to do is take all that mystery out of it, and make them where they're comfortable with the operating system. And then the RPG and most of them have no problems at all with RDI. I don't even mention SCU or PDM in any of the classes.
I have never opened a program in SEU.
Yeah, I think
it's always been RDI and VS Code. That's it.
Yeah, I think everybody's moving away from that.
Mm-hmm. Not fast enough.
I know.
No, I have senior developers working in my company that say, yeah, if it's a small change, I'll open it up in SEU. But it doesn't take any longer to open it in RDI and make the same change. So I'm not sure what the hesitation is.
So is it learning a new product like RDI? I mean, that's one of the things I run into when I'm talking to customers all the time, that it's not an easy to use product. It's hard to learn.
RDI is kind of bloated.
Well, and it's overwhelming when you come from a text-based IDE, if you want to call SEU an IDE, right? To something like RDI. Okay, but you have to understand these young people, most of them have used Eclipse or Visual Studio, so it's like second nature. And you know, RDI is really nothing but a Eclipse with a bunch of plugins, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they just take right to it. Now we have a class that we train seasoned developers to get them away from SEU and PDM. And what I've done there is it's RDI and modular programming, because a lot of those guys really struggle with the whole modules and service programs and all that kind of stuff. And so I learned a long time ago, you don't really, if I just stood there and said, RDI does this, RDI does that, and don't have you actually put the pieces together, when I leave, it goes right out the other ear, you know what I mean? So, and when I was doing a lot of in-person training before the COVID came along, that's what I do when I'd go to companies, is I'd show them how to do service programs and modules and procedures, and then that way they'd actually have something to do with RDI. You know what I mean? They'd have a tool, they build something with it. And when they build something with it, they understand how the stuff gets built and then how to use the tool to do the build. So we do that. I mean, it's really, and even those guys get, their supervisor gets a report card that we call it a progress report, but it's really a report card. Mm-hmm. It says how they did in the class. And it's surprising the difference in effort when they know that they're going to get a progress report when they're done.
Oh yeah.
You know, so it's kind of unique in professional training, because most professional, we've all gone to a conference, right? And when we go to this guy and he disappears when we get off the airplane, and when we get back on the airplane to go home, he's got this really nice suntan. You go, I've been looking for you all week. You know, we all been there, right?
Yeah. I mean, on the beach? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Out by the pool?
On the lake.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. So I was going to ask, during COVID, how were things? I think that we had a lot of people that, you know, as we headed into COVID or at the start of it, it really opened up the doors for a lot of companies to, one, they all saw how quickly the IBM I pivoted. And, you know, business today is, it's incredible for a lot of companies, how much they've grown, how they were able to leverage this pandemic to help grow their business. And I know for a lot of companies, they took a look inside at how their business were set up, what tools they were using. And so did you see an uptick in you know, people coming through your services and your classes?
Well, you know, we've only been in business for, well, 4.5 years, right? So we got hit with that. It takes quite a bit to put all this stuff together, right? I mean, it's unbelievable. I often mm-hmm. kid saying if I knew what I was getting into, I'd probably went and drove an Uber. You know, the hours and putting this, Michelle did a wonderful job. We have an LMS that runs the classes because you have to have a really sophisticated LMS, learning management service, to do all the videos. We got videos, we got, you know, and then we got a partition that we get from Larry Bullheis. You know, putting all these pieces together and then the marketing, and, you know, when we first started, Peg, I often tell people the last thing I sold before I started this business was tires in a tire store when I was in college. You know, and tires are really easy to sell because usually they come in with a flat tire and they're not going anywhere till they buy, right? So,
yep, absolutely.
So, you know, getting all that rolling and everything, and we were really starting to go toward the end of the second year, and then we got hit with COVID. And I think right at first it was like shock value for everybody. Nobody really, education really wasn't what anybody was thinking about. But then as the year went on, we ended up having a pretty good year because I think somewhere in May or June, I think companies start thinking, well, we got all these people at home. It's a new experience. We've been wanting to do some training and we were starting to develop a presence out there. So we ended up having a halfway decent year, in year three. Right. Yeah, we did all right. I'm just glad I decided to do an online business rather than an in-person business. So I guess
yeah, absolutely.
I did something right, right?
Yeah, sounds like yeah. You had some foresight there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Jim, you are an IBM champion. You speak everywhere. I know Tony has seen you speak, and you attend user groups, you share your knowledge constantly with everyone out there. So 5-year IBM I champion, by the way, that's really exciting. So I just want to ask this question because you kind of hit on something, you know, education and people, you know, going to events, it's kind of stalled a little bit. And I know the WMCPA, you guys have an annual conference, and I'm just kind of wondering, what are you guys going to do going forward? Are you hoping to get back to your online, in-person conference, or are you thinking you're going to maybe try virtual? What are your thoughts on that? What are you hoping for?
Well, the WMCPA is, you guys know, we were ready to have our 35th annual conference. And I should mention that pretty much the whole WMCPA conference, board, the WMCPA board, are graduates of mine. So I think it's probably the only IBM user group where everybody's under 50, probably under 40.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
That's impressive.
So I'm really proud of them. It's really a good bunch of young people, young IBMI professionals. And when the COVID came in, we actually were going to have, if you remember, the government shut the whole world down right on, I believe it was a Thursday. And we were to have our conference the next Monday.
Yeah, the next week. I remember that. Yeah.
So we had to, you know, I feel so bad for people in the hospitality business. You know, I know, Peg, you've been there at the Lake Lawn.
Yeah, beautiful resort. Oh my gosh.
In a small town in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. you know. So anyway, then we ended up canceling it again in this year. Well, we really wanted to negotiate something with him, and AJ Gomez, who's the president, and I and the board, some of the board, we really worked with him to try to get something together. So the way it's going to work out, we're going to have a conference next March, period. I mean, an in-person conference next March.
Good. I'm driving over. I love that conference. It's one of my favorites. Just one, to see all of the great people of Wisconsin and those who come from Minnesota and Illinois. But the facility that you guys host at is absolutely beautiful. It is so nice. They do a wonderful job there. So I'm really happy to hear that.
And, you know, a lot of people that live down south, like in Florida and stuff, they don't understand how beautiful Wisconsin is in March.
It is God's country.
It is. I mean, I 14 it. Inches of snow in March is nothing.
Nothing. And it melts pretty fast. So
we had a guy from South Africa come one time, and I picked him up at the Milwaukee airport. We went down by the lake and I showed him my boat. It was sitting on the dock and it was like 50 degrees out, right? Well, that night the storm come through and there were like 8 inches of snow the next day. And he had never seen snow. He'd never seen snow in his life. And he was beside himself. So
I mean, he came all the way from South Africa for your conference. That's impressive.
Well, he had other business here. Oh. We ended up getting him to speak. Oh,
nice.
So, but yeah, so we're going to have a conference, you know, and I just think that, you know, people got to go on with their lives.
And yes, absolutely. Will you be speaking at Commons Power Up coming up here in October at Virginia Beach?
That's what I plan on.
All right. I'll be there. We'll have to plan a quick sit down and do a quick little recording when we're together.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
I'm ready to get back at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Tony, any other questions for our guests today?
I do. I have one other thing to say about these conferences, though.
Sure.
Yeah.
These virtual conferences that everybody's done. You know, I think about Ocean. I think about, you know, what Common's been doing. It's been a supreme effort by these people.
And, yes.
You know, I think we all have to, you know, give them a round of applause because, you know,
well,
everybody
it's not
got hit
easy.
With it.
Yeah.
And so I think everybody's going to be so excited to be able to go back in person. I think that's really exciting. But, mm-hmm. you know, people that haven't ever put a conference on or haven't ever been involved in that process, I don't think have any idea what these guys went through to pull that off. So,
yeah, those
kudos
conferences
to
are
that.
Fun. That's the first time I met you in person, too, at Indianapolis. I guess it would have been 2 years ago now, almost 2 whole years ago. We did a talk on modernization with sub procedures, I think, and I walked away learning something from that. So thanks for that one.
Well, thank you.
I do have another question for you, though. And I know that a lot of companies are coming to you now and saying, hey, train this developer. But back when you had all of your students at that college, they fall in love with RPG. They say the IBM I is great. How did you help them find work in the IBM I space?
Well, the WMCP.
Where do they go to look for RPG jobs is what I'm asking. Because I've Googled it and... You know, some companies write iSERI, some write AS400 programmer. It's hard.
Yeah, my name's not Trevor, but, you know, to give Trevor credit, we got to quit calling it what it's not. But as far as the answer to your direct question is the WMCPA was very instrumental to most of the students getting jobs. And then I also took them to Common every year that I could. I could get the money and take them. And really, they would get snatched up at Common. So, I mean, And I was actually talking to a headhunter in Texas just a week or so ago. And she said that as far as she was concerned, a young person should learn how to read and learn RPG if they want to make a living. Because I guess they're dying for RPG programmers down there. And you're right. You know, they call it everything under the sun, which is like, you know, how many Windows shops say we run Windows 97? You know, Windows 98. You know, I mean, that's you got to call point. It what it is, right?
Exactly.
And it's confusing. It's confusing the young people. What broke me of it, of calling it, you know, the old names, because I referred to it to, you know, I've been working on that platform since 1989, and I refer to it as a 400, right? The 400 this, the 400 that. Well, when you're teaching young developers, especially like in a concepts class, if you use old terminology, you can see them Google it, you know, and I've had them tell me afterwards, this machine was made before I was born.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
You know,
yeah.
Why would you want to work on that? You know, so, you know, I would always take them to, you know, IBM's website, you know, the hardware, and I'd show them one of the big systems and say, well, now look at the memory that's got, you know, 32 terabyte of memory. And they go, oh, they mean hard drive, right? And I go, no, that's RAM. And they go, oh, and you can just see their eyes get big, right? So, you know, a company needs to promote themselves. I have a presentation I've done, Failure to Modernize, and talks about, you know, the opportunities for young developers, the opportunities for companies. And, you know, you just can't leave that stuff, that old stuff around. I think companies have been just spoiled, you know, and now they're looking at all this technical debt. But I think more and more companies are deciding to fix what they have instead of, you know, throwing it away and trying to get something new. Because the tools are out there, the you know, and you tell a young developer that, hey, you know, I need your help fixing this stuff. They're all about that. You know, but you tell them, oh, go learn System 36 RPG so you can fix a program. They're going to look at you and leave. You know, so.
Right. Right. Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
Well, that was it for me. I have nothing else written down. But you say that you have a funny story about becoming the WMPCA CPA president.
President.
Oh, yeah. I got to tell you that one.
So let's hear it.
I got a friend of mine. His name's Bruce Batterby, and he was an admin for many years. And I was at the college. I'd only been at the college maybe 2 years. And he decided to take a Java class that I was teaching. And he goes, hey, he says, and he got me to go to the WMCPA a couple times, right? They had their meetings on Thursday nights. So he comes into class one day and he says, hey, he says, we were talking at the board meeting the other night that you should run for president of the WMCPA. And I said, Bruce, I don't know any of those guys. And, you know, I met a couple of them, but, you know, nobody's going to elect me president. And he goes, oh, that's all right. He says, we like to have more than one person run for president. So, you know, it'd be great if you'd agree. And I said, oh, okay, I'll run. So I show up there, you know, the night of the election, and I'm standing there and I go, well, where's the other guy running? And they all start laughing and said, well, there isn't anybody. And so I got elected by, so that's how I got to be president. And then they wouldn't let me leave for 13 years.
Wow. You got tricked.
Yeah.
So I am immediate past president now. And if AJ keeps the job that long, I'll be like really old.
Yeah. And AJ's been the president for a while now, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been five years.
Well,
4 or 5 years. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
But it's really cool because it's a young group and they're excited, and And I'm really excited to go back to Lake Lawn next year. You know, hopefully all this BS blows over before then.
Yeah, I hope so too.
We all do. We all want this to be over.
Yep. Yep. For sure. So before we head out, let's do our one incredible thing for the week. So Jim, you are our guest today. So what is your one incredible thing this week?
Well, I'm taking most of tomorrow off, which, you know, when you work for yourself, the guy that you work for won't let you off most days.
Right.
But I'm taking the day off tomorrow if Michelle gives me permission. But my two of my brothers and one sister is coming up here, and we're going to go sailing for the weekend.
Oh my gosh. That sounds awesome.
They haven't been, up here in probably 10 years. So I'm really excited about that.
So are you going to sail just around Lake Michigan? Are you going to head up to the islands? What are you going to do?
We'll probably go up to Milwaukee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be fun.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And tell us again, what kind of boat do you have?
I have a 1977 CNC 29. So it's like 29 and a half feet long.
Mm-hmm.
They say it sleeps six, but you'd all have to get along real well.
Yeah, it would be cozy.
my wife and I, we've done a lot of trips on Lake Michigan, which is a lot of fun.
Oh, nice. Nice. Oh, that's exciting. Well, that'll be fun. We'll have a great weekend and happy sailing. So how about you, Tony? What's your one thing this week?
I feel like every week my thing is comic books or video games, but I'm going to do that again. So I've been playing this game called Death's Door, which has just been awesome. It's this little indie title. It was like $20 or something like that. And it's you're this little tiny crow that's a Grim Reaper, and it's the best Zelda game that I played that isn't a Zelda game. There are dungeons and puzzles and a little bit of action and fighting, and the art's amazing. So I've been really into that this week.
Fantastic. Death
Door, $20. I forget who the publisher is. I'll look it up.
It's called Death Door?
Death Door, yeah. You're a little Grim Reaper, so like death, yeah. It's not scary. Oh. It's not violent. Okay. It's actually really cute, so.
Oh, a cute death game.
Yeah, it's a cute death. Well, you know, video game death isn't real death.
No.
By this developer called Acid Nerve. But it's great. Really fun. Highly recommend it. Very fun.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. So make sure you send that over to me. So have you been like showing Parker how to play that game, or is it too scary for Parker?
Parker is 18 months old. The game is not scary. I'll send you a little video, but it's not scary. It's a puzzle game with, you got like you're a bird. How scary could it be?
Right.
But Parker is 18 months old, and he doesn't know what he's doing. He just likes smashing buttons on a keyboard.
this future programmer we have here. I love it. Or gamer. Future gamer.
Everything, you know? Right? I hope he follows in my footsteps.
Yeah, yeah, for
right,
sure.
Don't we all?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Maybe Jim will teach him RPG in 17 and a half more years.
There you go.
Or even sooner.
Yeah, maybe.
8 years old. You know, it's funny, you ask some of these kids, well, when did you write your first program? And they go, oh, I don't know, eight.
Yeah,
go, eight. Oh.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm here I am, 30 years old, shoveling cards into a card reader, because that's the way we, you know, so.
Oh,
times
man.
Have changed.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Peg, what do you got?
My incredible one thing is my brand new inflatable paddleboard. I went to a party last Friday afternoon, and I won it. It was like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing. I've been wanting one forever. And I was like, okay, if I, you know, I'm like talking to Grace, my youngest daughter, and together we're going, okay, if you spin and you get table three, get the paddleboard. If you spin and get table three, get the paddleboard. Well, Grace was actually getting her henna done at this little party. And so her name was called. And so I went up and I spun for her and got table three. So we got a brand new inflatable paddleboard. So I'm super excited. It comes in a backpack. so I can bike over to the lake, inflate it, put it in the lake, and just spend some time out on the lake in the sun enjoying it. I'm super excited. I'm super happy. I'm forgetting the name of the paddleboard, but I will make sure that it is in the show notes so everybody can go and check it out and maybe get one as well.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
Super cool.
Yes.
So before you got this inflatable paddleboard, did you take your paddleboard and like put it on your head and then bike over to the lake?
Well, you know what? This is my first paddleboard. I don't have a paddleboard and I've always wanted one.
Have you used it yet?
No, just blown it up. It's only been a week.
Take tomorrow off.
I know.
Go paddleboarding.
For sure. Take tomorrow afternoon and go do that. So while you're out boating, Jim, on Lake Michigan, I'll be paddleboarding on Lake Harriet.
Cool. So I was going to say, that would be a YouTube moment, though, if you could balance one of the things on your head and ride your bike.
Oh, I know. But it's great, you know, because it, like I said, it's got a backpack for it. But I have a Toyota 4Runner, so I can just blow it up, pop the seat down, hang it out the back of the window, and head over to the lake. So my husband actually thought it would be great to get me like a trailer for the side of my my pedaling bike, so I could just put it in the trailer and bike over to the lake with it. It's like, cool. You get more exercise that way. I'm like, yeah, that's right.
And paddleboarding is an exercise in and of itself.
Uh-huh.
You'll be all right.
Yeah. And then when I go by the lake and the paddleboarders, guys and gals that do yoga on their paddleboards and they're standing on their heads on the lake, I'm going, what the heck? I need to figure that out. Not.
My wife and I did it one time when we were down in Florida in the ocean, and I sucked at it. She was really good at it. So I fell a bunch. She stood up her first try.
Oh, very fun. Well, I'll let you know how that goes. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everybody for joining in the Incredible Eye Show. We will see you here again. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So as we head into August, now would be a great time for you to go out and check out Power Up 2021, Common's virtual and on-site conference that is scheduled for October 4th through the 6th at Virginia Beach. There's tons of great information out on the website, so click the show notes to see more information about that. We'd like to take a moment here to thank our sponsors. Common is the largest association serving the IBMI community. They provide leading education, advocacy, and networking opportunities for members to enhance their careers. Mid-Range Dynamics provides application lifecycle and API management for hundreds of enterprises and small IT teams worldwide. Roten takes a holistic approach to support. Their engineers support the entire IT estate from environmental monitoring through networking and storage to the server hardware and operating systems that run on them. They specialize in IBM i, but their skills cover a number of other platforms, allowing them to offer a one-stop shop for all their clients' needs. They know customers hate having IT issues, so they work proactively to monitor and support their systems, often fixing issues before they know they've ever occurred. Roten, IT solutions made easy. Don't forget to hit the like and subscribe button, and we'll see you on the next show.